It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Coming up on today's episode, we break down the Jets' OT loss to Montreal, plus a look back at the win in Colorado, and a shakeup out in Ottawa.
Hello, everybody. Recording live from somewhere.
What's good and welcome to another episode of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon_Rewicki or the podcast at Skates Plates Pod. All right, let's dive right on in as we get ready for the last few games for the Winnipeg Jets before the holiday break comes. Under a week to go until Christmas is here. So, time's running out, so let's dive on into it. About an hour or so after the Winnipeg Jets return home from a trip out west, they battle back, but they drop an OT decision to the Montreal Canadiens on home ice. So we'll break that one down, as well as look out to some more positive times in their last matchup against the Avalanche, and a few other bits of news and notes as well with you guys. Doing so with me once again is CJOB's Tyson Rewicki. Tyson, fresh off the CJOB Christmas party? Is that where you were at?
A Christmas get together. Well, I wouldn't call it a party. Brandon, I'm not gonna lie. I'm having a hard time trying to be cheery right now. People, I mean, you can't see what I'm wearing right now, but I'm decked out in Eagles gear. I just got lamboosted. I don't even know if that's a word, but
it's definitely not.
But it fits the description here. I got chirped. It was just awful. Skylar Peters, Seahawks fan, kind enough to host, but man,
yeah. And unfortunately, I'm with you.
Like,
yeah, I'm with you on the Eagles train, and we have officially departed contender land and have docked the train in Fraudville. So that's super cool. When you start the season 10-1, it feels like it's over before the playoffs happen. Not upset at all. That's super cool. Lambasted, I think, is the words you were looking for, but we might have to make lamboosted. We might have to start keeping track of Tysonisms, and lamboosted is going to be right up there at the top. People are probably getting lamboosted at Christmas office parties right now. I don't know if you were. Even though you're getting chirped out there by Skylar Peters and the rest of the CJOB team, but negative tones aside, let's push that out of the rear view because I don't think anybody wants to hear about it. Anyways, they want to hear about the negative tones of a 3-2 OT loss to the Montreal Canadiens by the Jets. So let's break that one down. The first game back, and you know what, kind of to me at least, Tyson, it was the dangerous, like, schedule loss this game, right? Like, the classic come back home after a road trip and a lot of travel, and that first game back on the homestand usually ends in pretty sour fashion. And I just thought that's what we saw for the majority of the game. I didn't think the Jets played bad or anything like that, but I don't know, maybe just a tiny bit of lethargic play. Not as sharp as they've been basically all season long. And I mean, I'll just give them credit for, you know, sticking in the fight and finding a way to battle through and just grabbing that single point, which is still big, right? Like, I mean, if you're not at your best, get it to OT and do the coin flip. And, you know, those points can add up pretty quickly by the end of the year. But I thought they were fine, you know, going up against a Montreal team that's scrappy and pesky. But it just wasn't their best effort. And I think that it was pretty evident that that's a tough. I know you go out west and California itself, not much travel in there, but it's a long flight out. Even a Colorado after that, like another long flight. That was a bit of a tough scheduling quirk there for the Jets. And I just thought it showed out there on the ice. But, you know, fortunate enough, at least down 2-0 in that situation, to battle back and earn at least a single point on the night.
Yeah, like you mentioned, like this is the definition of a letdown game, right? Like it's not that every team's going to have this. Like it's not, but you know, you come up a big win against arguably your biggest rival right now and a dominant and convincing win too on top of that. And it's just, yeah, like Montreal comes in, you kind of have the big brother thing going on with them at the moment right now. And so it's kind of, you could see it coming realistically, like the decor, they weren't as sharp as they have been throughout the year. It's just, they, like you mentioned, they didn't play a bad game, but it clearly wasn't their best game either. And Montreal came out to play. Like they were ready. They were able to impose some of their will on the Jets, I think earlier on in the game. And then after, once the lead was kind of established, I thought the Jets were like, it's go time now. Like we're the better team here. Let's tie this one up. And they did. And like, you look at what you're seeing too, is, I mean, the Perfetti goal scramble in front, obviously he gets the rebound there, but that Vilardi goal, the setup, like leading up to that goal too, you just see the skill oozing out of him and he's really feeling it right now. Like even on that goal, to some people, it may look really easy, that for what he did there is absolutely insane. At that angle too, with how fast the puck was coming off of the goaltender to get that rebound off the skate, like that's just high level skill right there. You cannot teach that level of ability. And hey, like the Jets, we keep on saying it more and more, especially after that LA game, but man, Chevy absolutely slaughtered the Kings. Oh. Absolutely slaughtered. But
his hands are tremendous. He's a player. Like he's a keeper. They nailed it. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And it wasn't their best game, but this is better. If this is one of your worst games of the season, realistically, I think your team's doing pretty good right now. And if you look back to the team last year, I think if they had a game like this where there's a letdown game, it's 4-5 Montreal. And you're like, what is going on with this team? But they stuck in it. It's just sometimes, and then you get the power play at the end to like the Ehlers penalty. It's probably a penalty, but you know, the Montreal defender didn't do a hell of a whole lot to get out of the way on that. Like, right. Like, there's a little bit of,
I didn't like the call. I thought it was kind of cheesy.
There was no effort made to avoid the trip either. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like those ones,
like, yeah, let me just, there's your stick and it's coming. And, yep. I'm just good. I don't know. I wasn't a big fan of it. And then it just kind of ruins the OTP here. I know they don't call the, you know, the plays on whether or not it ruins the entertainment value of a game. But I just thought it was I just didn't like the call all that much there. But you're right. I mean, like, look, if that's your letdown game, that's a damn good letdown game to find a way to battle back there. You know, they weren't sharp. I'm not sharp either, apparently, because for some reason I kept saying first game back to kick off a homestand. That was Saturday. I don't know why I keep saying that. Sorry, excuse me, just once. So I'll stop doing that. second game in the homestand there. But yeah, coming off that big win against Colorado there, maybe just a bit of a step back in terms of execution in the game. And I mean, they weren't given any favors by the officiating, which I think we'll get to in this as well. But I'll just quickly throw it over there to you, Tice. What did you see on the game-winning goal? Excuse me. I'm trying to get there. The game-winning goal on the power play by Montreal. Something I noticed, but I want to see if you picked up anything on what went wrong on that one and if anybody was to blame.
Battle through. I get what you're putting down. I'll give you a little bit of reprieve, another Tysonism. But it was there. I mean, that was a really nice, a high level play pass by Suzuki that started it all off on the initial play there, right? Like, it's just you have the especially on a 4-on-3, you have the defenders kind of that you're getting scrambly at that point. You're trying to keep the triangle intact. You're trying to move along with the puck as a unit, and it's hard for three guys to kind of get to stay on the same page like that when the puck's moving around like that. And then Barron just has the shot. It was a good shot. There was a screen, moving screens in front too. But I just thought that's the kind of play that you want if you're the Habs from Suzuki and Caulfield. It's just, and you just haven't really been getting that too much this year from them. And I think that's the big concern with Montreal.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's where the play started. You're right, on the Suzuki cross ice pass. Like, that just sets up everything. Chaos happens after that. I mean, there was two things for me, you know, one obviously being with the struggles of the penalty kill at times this year, giving up that pass is that's what's killed them, right? Like, you can't, it's just the cardinal sin of a PK is to avoid that happening, because it just breaks everything down and it's difficult to, you know, be structured after that. I will say though, that was a hell of a pass. I mean, the Jets lanes. Were like, they were in the lanes. It just found its way through. So maybe it's just a little bit of a stick tap to Suzuki on that one. But I didn't like the way Hellebuck played the shot. I mean, watch the replay again, if you can, from Justin Barron's angle, essentially. And it looks to me like Helly guesses. Like, he kind of moves blocker first for no real apparent reason. And Barron picks the corner top glove there. But maybe it's chair, or maybe it's nitpicking a little bit here. But I mean, kind of stationary from dead center in the ice, basically top of the circle. I think it's a shot Hellebuck should stop. I didn't like the way that he played it on that one. Morse, I think to me that was the big issue on that play, not necessarily giving up a nice pass by Suzuki there, but more so I think Hellebuck will tell you, yeah, I kind of guessed a little bit and should stop one. I should stop that one right in the middle of the slot area there. Not even the slot, it was above the slot. That's how far away the shot was.
Yeah, I wonder if that net front presence kind of messed with him a little bit. I just took a peek at it, and you see the net front guy kind of he's going towards the front of the net and then peels off last second to give that blocker side for Barron to shoot at. And I wonder if Hellebuck kind of thought, oh, he's making room for the blocker side. He sees something there, and he kind of flinched a little bit early. But you really shouldn't be guessing in the NHL. I mean, it's easier said than done for us sitting there watching, but I mean, it's tough. It's like a 4-on-3 too. It was super scrambly too. He wasn't totally set in the right position there. So as Hellebuck, like you said, you would definitely say I should have stopped it. But hey, sometimes it's just not your night. And like you mentioned, you are in the lane. The puck goes through. Maybe on another night, the clips the back of the skate blade, and the puck goes to Dylan, and he clears it out. Right, like it's.
Yeah, I mean, no biggie. I thought he should have stopped it. He's still a great goalie, still having a great year. Yeah. Just didn't love the way that he played the final shot on the goal there.
Do you think that sometimes it's weird? It seems like when he lets in those bad goals, they're around the same spot. Hey, like even like just thinking back to like the Darnell Nurse goal against Edmonton, it was kind of around the same area. It's not the same play at all because it was just a zone entry there, but. It seems like sometimes those shots kind of handcuff him.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for you. I don't know. maybe there is, maybe there isn't. I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. I think if he just kind of stays set there, you know, maybe he's got a chance to at least get a bit of a glove on it and tip it over the net. But he didn't. And the Jets lose 3-2. I talked about the Ehlers penalty there near the end of the game that set up that OT winning goal. To me, that's not even the worst officiating error on the night. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, Tice, but how the hell is that not a head pass by Anderson on goal number two for Montreal there? Like, what? I mean, but to me, Bones is 1,000% in the right to, you know, no challenge flag, but to throw the challenge in there. I get how you could miss that real time. Right, because maybe you're watching that, you think it did da. But to review that, I'm just blown away that the NHL and the officials screwed that one up. Because to me, I mean, if it touches Anderson's stick, it is like razor thin. But to me, you have to have some semblance of control with your stick to then transfer possession to another player. You know what I mean? Like, I just felt it looked wrong watching it live. And then to actually see the replay and be like, yeah, that confirmed what I saw. And then to have it just completely overturned anyways there. Yeah, just like, am I crazy? Like, I think it was a complete bungle job by the refs there.
Well, and not to mention that review there opens up a can of worms for that kind of play, right? Like, what's to stop a guy from grabbing the puck around the net and throwing it in the crease? You know what? Like, really? Like, if Hellebuck stick tips it, if he goes for a poke check there like he did, and he swats it, and there's more scramble there, and the puck ends up going to net, but it's still a direct result of a hand pass. But because of the rule, and because it's, oh, it grazed his stick, so therefore possession changed and whatnot, like, that opens a huge can of worms. You can't have guys going around the net just willy-nilly dropping the pucks down in front of the crease. Like, it's just...
I mean, I'm not... That would be awesome. I'm not worried about that. That's not my issue with it.
But
it's just, no. Like, you've got to have control of the puck on your stick after you... Like, you can't just... right? Like, you've got to... Either that or somebody on the jet has to, you know, lose possession of the puck, right?
Yeah.
Like, there was just no... To me, there was no transfer of possession from Anderson dropping the puck down to the Montreal player, then shooting it into the open net there. Like, yeah. I just thought it was open and shut. This is going to be nice and easy. And I really don't understand how the ref saw it differently.
There was no play made on the puck by anyone after the hand pass, which is why it blows my mind. Like, I really, and for that long of a review too, you kind of think, oh, okay, they're probably going to take this one back. This has been like a 5-minute review or 6-minute, like, it was
I changed the channel, it was disgustingly long, but
yeah. Like, and you're just thinking, oh, they're gonna take this one back, right? And it's just I mean I don't know what's a goal and what's not anymore. Depending on the angle, the camera angle, it just seems like if it's not 100% like closed and doors shut conclusive, even though that one is pretty much as closed as you can get. It's just, I really don't know. I do. And that's the other thing that pisses me off about the NHL, and not just the NHL, but sport, a lot of the sports in general. The NBA kind of does a little thing, but these refs and replay officials have no accountability. Like, they don't have to go out and explain the call or anything. They always send out like a little note after the goal reviews, but it's just BS. Like, it was deemed inconclusive, no goal. Like, there's no explanation, no accountability for any refs or replay officials. And the interviewing the replay officials kind of gets a little tough. But, man, like, I would love to hear a real person, not a written statement, but a real person break down why they decided that that's not – or that is a goal.
Yeah, transparency. I mean, that would be great for the fans. The NHL has basically, for its entire existence, opted to – forego transparency and keep things as close and shut as possible there. So, yeah, we didn't like it. I know a lot of people in Winnipeg didn't like it. You know, even watching TSN waiting for you to get back, Tyson. I can tell you Jay Onright and Luke Wilson didn't like it either. So, I mean, I don't know. It was just, to me, really bizarre that they opted to keep that one a goal for Montreal and potentially cost the Jets, you know, the full 2 points in regulation on that one. But... again, maybe just not the Jets night on that on this evening, and that was maybe the ultimate foreboding omen after that one got called a good goal. Quickly, just a look at the team in the game, Tyson. This fourth line's awesome. There's just no other way to put it. I mean, they're a bit of a buzzsaw. This isn't, you know, the greatest fourth line of all time or anything like that. But I mean, in this game against Montreal, they kind of were. These were the results. Gustafson, 18 shot attempts for, one against. Fjällby, 12-4, one against. Morgan Barron, while they were on the ice together as a trio, 16-4, one against. And again, that's just an attempt. I don't believe an actual shot made its way on goal with those three on the ice, mainly because Gustafsson and Janssen Fjällby have an expected goals rate of 100%, according to Natural Stat Trick, which also sounds stupid because they didn't score. So, like,
the math isn't happening.
Can you have 100% if you don't? Like, shouldn't it be either way? Because we're losing the forest for the trees there. The fourth line's been really, really good for a long, long time. I don't know if Kapari gets his spot back in the lineup, which is, you know, a shame for him in the sense of, you know, he did nothing wrong. But these guys are just rolling right now. And they had themselves another really, really nice game. And so, I mean, I think we just needed to give a little bit of love to the fourth line boys. Unfortunately, Morgan Barron loses the battle of brothers Barron in this one, but he played himself a pretty good game. And yeah, to me, the other one, Tice, again, Vilardi. I mean, he's just, especially watching him wearing 13, you know, Kevin Hayes wore 13 here in Winnipeg and that didn't go over too well. And sometimes I get like a PTSD, Steen Vilardi in that just because he's a big boy too. But man, he's Kevin Hayes if Kevin Hayes wanted to play his hardest every single night.
Yeah.
It's not out of the realm that Vilardi, however many games he plays this season, ends up as a point of game player and does so while bringing tremendous defensive impact as well. He is a major, major player for this team. And when Kyle Connor comes back, things get really scary with that forward group really, really quickly. You know, let alone if they find somebody to come in and, you know, supplant and supplement that second line center spot. But I thought those guys had a great game. And then obviously hope Morrissey's okay, tough as nails. But like, man, to come back from that immediately is one thing. Never good when something swells up about 10 seconds after it happens. So we might be getting full cage Morrissey for the next handful of games. But that's scary. Yeah, like you can't. I mean, losing Connor is one thing. To have Morrissey come in on top of that, that's DEFCON 1 right there. So hopefully it just hurts like hell for the next little bit. But he's good to play.
I wouldn't be surprised if he missed a game. That's a bad cut, especially right on the cheek. Like right, you're getting it right close to the orbital too. That's the other thing that's a little bit worrying is that it is a little that area's right around there. But that's right on the skin. And like, especially you start bleeding there too. It's just going to keep bleeding. And that's what makes it look way worse too, right? You see the instant blood come out. Like it was a nasty gash. That's going to be like you saw Chikrin's cheek the other day, right?
Yeah. Yeah. When he tried to abandon Ottawa. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be a cut similar to that, I think. And you know, maybe he does play. It's tough as nails if he does, because that thing is going to hurt. Like that's one thing I think people don't always totally understand is that even though like you have the cage on, like your face, it just hurts. Like it's just like everything you do, like anytime you take a bump, your head's just moving and you can just feel the sweat. Like it's brutal. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him miss a game. You mentioned Vilardi. You hit it on the head there. Like I don't need to touch too much more on that. He's a stud. Like he's just a stud. And the fourth line, that line I could very easily see becoming a cult classic line in Winnipeg, where like you look back in 10 years and like, Hey, remember that fourth line in the 2023-24 season? Like there was a buzzsaw. Like remember the Daryl Powell, Blair Betts, Ian LaPerriere fourth line for the Flyers?
How could anyone forget? Yeah.
It's those kind of things. And you just, if there's something special, it's weird to say about a fourth line group, especially when they're not like, they're not blowing you away offensively, but there's just something special about that group of players there. And it's just the way they play together. I've always been a huge fan of Janssen Fjällby. And I said it last episode, it's crazy that going into the season, he was like the team's 14th or 15th best forward. Like it really is. Like this organization, old depth is just crazy. And
I mean, it's great too that your fourth line plays a fourth line game. Gus is what, early 20s, Barron early 20s, Fjallby's like mid 20s at most, Kapari early 20s, right? Like you're not even doing the old, here's a bunch of 33-year-olds getting thrown out there. And you know, we're not giving some of the youngsters some ice time here. Like, yeah, this is a perfect world here where some young guys are getting some minutes, and they're more than handling their fair share. They've been really, really, really impressive. And I mean, it's massive too, in more of a macro sense, where, hey, if you can lop off a minute and a half of Scheifele's ice time, of Ehlers' ice time, by the time April rolls around, a little fresher, a little less banged up, win-win for everybody involved there. So I think the fourth line is going to keep this up moving forward down the rest of the way here, whoever is going to be a part of that iteration, because the Jets are pretty deep up front as it stands right now. Now, quickly, Tyson, let's try to wrap this up in the next handful of minutes here. Sucks the Jets lose to Montreal, and as it stands right now, the club finds themselves just 1 point back of Dallas and Colorado as well, I guess, for tops in the division there. But that's because the Winnipeg Jets once again took care of the Avalanche Saturday night, maybe even more resounding than their initial victory out in Denver earlier this year. I know Makar wasn't in the game. Pretty big impact potentially. But I don't know, Tyson, two games in a row in a short time against Colorado. Looked to me, it was pretty obvious who the best team was out there. Maybe not the best player, but kind of wild to think that the Jets, for now, at least, have outclassed Colorado so far this season.
Well, and especially, like, you take into account the series against Dallas so far, it hasn't gone the Jets' way. And there was some talk early in the season where people were saying, oh, they're beating up on bad teams. Like that stretch, I think that was like their first three losses were against solid teams. And everyone pointed to those and saying, well, once they play the good teams, they can't do anything. But you look against Colorado, and I think part of it, Colorado didn't look great in the two games against the Jets. But I wonder how much of that is Colorado declining, which I think they have a little bit? Or is it just the Jets are that much better than the Avalanche right now?
And I do think it is both. I think Colorado, as it stands, they're not the same team. I mean, it's not even a debate, really, right? Like, they were a wagon. They lost. What did they lose? Like, it's mainly up front, right? Like, losing 100-point Nazem Kadri. To go along with, they've lost JT Compher now.
Gabe Landeskog?
I guess that's a pretty big one, too. They basically lost, like, a really good to elite second line. And that to me, that's what's separating them from where they've been in the past. And, like, MacKinnon and Rantanen and them, well, you know, they're going to be better than 99% of the guys most nights. But there's not that secondary wave of scoring that we've seen from Colorado just yet. And Johansson and Drouin have not – they're big kind of, you know, lottery pick bets before the season started haven't panned out in a big way for them just yet. So that's why I definitely threw the caveat in. As of now, the Jets have outclassed Colorado. Because I do think it's going to be a much different Avalanche team once the trade deadline comes and goes. I'm not going to be shocked if they make some pretty significant additions. Dallas might too, which also sucks. But you touched on the main point there. Up against the two best teams in their division so far this year, Colorado, massive checkmark. Dallas, basically 2 1-goal losses that could have went either way. So they've shown that they can go up against the best of the best. So, I mean, that's obviously massively important for them as we head into the new year here. But, man, that was 6-2, it feels like, almost doesn't even do it justice to how much the Jets dominated Colorado in that hockey game and that very, very deserving 6-2 victory. It's going to be a tight one down the stretch. It's pretty wild. And, I mean, hey, winning the division would be great. First seed would be great, all that. But just kind of staying in that second, third spot, staying in the mix with Kyle Connor out. Like, if they're in that spot by the time he gets back in, I think that's probably best case scenario for the team. And then we see if any additions happen or are necessary after that.
Well, and don't look now either. We're looking at the two teams ahead of the Jets in the Central. But what about the team that's right behind them?
Oh, we got to do this again.
I don't know. It's just I think there's someone saying that the Predators might be a sneaky dark horse team this year. And I don't know. I just you gotta keep an eye on those pesky Preds.
Don't worry, we got Vancouver, Philly, Dallas, Carolina on their schedule next. So four straight L's there. Don't worry, nature will right itself. Yeah, they're probably not going to finish second last in the division anymore. But I'm not buying them. But it's wild because the rest of the West, like after the top three in each division, it's really not good. Like it is rough.
A team that's just out of the playoff picture just fired their head coach and they're like in a free like turmoil.
Yeah.
Like they're barely out of the playoffs right now.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's really good for, yeah, no. I mean, we'll see. I mean, Edmonton's, it's pretty wild. Edmonton goes on an 8-2 run and they're still 5 points out of a playoff spot right now. But I mean, that you almost wonder too, like, if you're the Jets, would you rather play, like, would you rather win the division and face white hot Edmonton in round one or maybe take your chances against Dallas, Colorado? Whatever. We'll worry about that. That's a good problem to worry about if you're the Jets. But we'll keep an eye on the Western playoff race as the season continues here. And then one final note, Tyson. Big news out of the nation's capital. The Ottawa Senators have fired DJ Smith, and they're going back. It's retro time. Jacques Martin, interim head coach there in Ottawa. Miley, and let's just, you know, spend a minute or two on this. My only comment is, why so long? Like, DJ Smith has coached Ottawa for 5 seasons. That's a crazy long time for a playoff team. You know what I mean? Like, they've been, I know the first 2, maybe 3 years, sure, as a rebuilding club. But it's wild to me that he's lasted this long. I know the Ottawa ownership, the new regime, wanted to do the whole stability thing and all that. But I mean, come on, at some point, results have to matter here. I think Ottawa did the right thing. And then you can kind of reassess it either later this year or after the season comes to an end. But I would also say, speaking of that other team that you mentioned there, you know, you've got a young, talented team in Ottawa. And a Stanley Cup winning coach basically has just fallen into your lap in Craig Berube. I wouldn't wait too long to, you know, have a few other teams make the rounds and talk with him about their openings. I would maybe try to speed up that process a little bit. But what did you make of the news of DJ Smith getting the axe in Ottawa?
I mean, it was about time, right? Like, this team has been brutal this year. I don't even know. And especially, like, there's something going on in that locker room that needs to be addressed, because you have your captain out there in every game that you're losing acting like a child. I love Brady Tkachuk, but it has been this last 10-game stretch has been like, dude, like, stop. Like, just stop. You have to have, this team has no composure. They have no, it's, to me, it was DJ Smith was more of their friend than their coach. That's
yeah, well, what I see. And good news, Tyson, that won't be the case with Jacques Martin.
Yeah, no. it's sort of poetic, right? Like Daniel Alfredson Hobson was Jacques Martin when Jacques Martin came to Ottawa the first time, right? Like that was Daniel Alfredson's kind of coming into the NHL. Some tough with Spezza too. Like there was a lot of tough love there, and we saw the player that Jason Spezza became. But what really weirds me out is that you chose now. That I get that it's kind of overdue, but you do it right before the holidays too, and I wonder. I was talking with one of our colleagues who has a great Sens podcast, Locked On Sens. Like, it's an unbelievable hockey podcast, Ross Levitan. But he was telling me about DJ Smith was saying, because he ran practice today. Like, he still ran, which is weird to fire your coach after he runs practice. But he mentioned that DJ Smith said something about along the lines of, I wanted the guys to have a fun practice today. And I wonder if Steve Staios is just sitting in the back like, wait, what did you just say? A fun practice? Like, we just blew a lead, and we're trying to have a fun practice? Like, get this guy.
Yeah, I think that's probably the this is going to be my last practice. So yeah. Maybe they throw a pizza party. Hey, pizza party, can everybody loves a pizza party. That's right? That'll turn around the vibes there in Ottawa. Yeah. So we'll see what happens there with the Sens. They got a lot of games in hand on everybody for some odd reason. Okay, quickly, 10 seconds, go.
Yeah, one quick point. Well, a lot of games because they were overseas on the Sweden trip. But yeah, it's way too many games. But I'm going to make a bold prediction right now. The next head coach of the Ottawa Senators will be Patrick Waugh.
Ooh, well, sign me up for that. I mean, if Patrick Waugh behind a bench anywhere, sign me up for that. Ottawa, hey, if you want to talk about composure, I don't know if Patty Waugh's, you know, the best example for Brady Kachuk to follow there. So that would be, yeah, that would be guaranteed fireworks. I mean, hey, Battle of Ontario, Patty Waugh thrown in the mix. Yeah, I like that.
Ann Lauer has connections with Waugh. He used to be a part of the same junior team with Waugh.
Let's do it. I like it. All right. Well, hopefully better times in Ottawa. Maybe they can follow the same path that the Winnipeg Jets are doing right now and get themselves back into it. Hey, we saw what Bones has done over the past couple years. Sometimes a spark behind the bench is exactly what you need. But that'll do it for the episode here. We'll cap it off there. And one more before the holidays. So we'll get to that with you guys on Friday morning. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Skates and Plates here on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki, with CJOB's Tyson Rewicki once again. We're back at it Friday morning, and we will break down the Jets matchup with the Red Wings on Wednesday night and see if any moves are made before the holiday freeze takes place around the NHL as well. So a little bit of action for you guys before things slow down over the next handful of days. Until then, though, enjoy the rest of your work week. Stay safe and have a good time, everybody. We'll talk to you on Friday. Peace.